Let's give them a round of applause. We're so fortunate tonight to have the Maharaj here, Devamrita Swami, who's such an elevated personality, and he joined the movement in 1972. That's right, right, Maharaj? 72? And in 82, he took the renounced order of life. He was initiated by Prabhupada in 72. Maharaj travels all over the world speaking, and his classes are the best. I owe a lot to the Maharaj. He actually preached to me when I was coming to the temple, and he cut through a lot of my nonsense, so I'm grateful to him, and thank you so much for coming, Maharaj.
We've been discussing some interesting topics the past few days in Los Angeles, last night here in San Diego. What we're trying to do is actually see the science of bhakti as application rather than just a religious belief. Now, religious belief is nice. Even atheists these days are noting that without some kind of communitarianism that is brought about by religion, life is kind of empty. So even atheists these days are trying to start atheist churches in order to capture some kind of group feeling, some kind of togetherness which they feel is missing. Sometimes you may hear people say that although we're atheists, we do acknowledge that religion has very nice psychological purposes, artistic, cultural purposes. It inspires art. It inspires music. And it gives people a sense of purpose in life. So often atheists will acknowledge that religion isn't all bad. Of course, very militant atheists don't want to give any credit to religion. They'll say that religion has caused so many wars. Millions of people have died in the name of religion. Actually, though, if you look at statistics from history, the numbers of people who have died in conflicts that have nothing to do with religion far exceed any religious battles. So, those who are militant atheists, they don't want to give any credit to religion. Those who are benign atheists, open-minded atheists, they acknowledge that, yeah, religion does good things, you know? It's fantasy, of course, but fantasy does good things. It's mythology, but somehow or other, the fantasy and mythology helps people make it through life. And that shouldn't be overlooked. When we come to bhakti, we may be bringing a lot of religious expectations. I want to believe in God. I don't want to sin. And that's good. There's one verse in the Bible my mother would always quote to me, that the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. And we'll certainly agree with that, as bhakti yogis will agree that the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. If you're a law breaker, if you're a criminal, you should live in fear of the police. But if you are a law-abiding citizen, why should you fear the police? That is, if you're living in a city or country where the police are not a negative influence. I've been to many places in the world. Let's take Bolivia, for example. In Bolivia, the people say, if your house is burgled, if someone robs your stuff, and you call the police will come and take whatever's left. Many countries just like that. But let's just take it for granted that police are a benign force. I think I was looking at the motto on the side of the San Diego police cars. What does it say? For protection and what else? To serve and protect. Okay. So, persons who are in harmony with the law, they actually don't fear police. They welcome the police. I remember various neighborhoods I grew up in. When the police car would come up the street, everyone was happy. Oh, there's Officer so-and-so. And very friendly neighborhood spirit. Then there are other neighborhoods in which the police show up and everything's tense. What are you guys doing here? Get out of here. We don't want you. So let's consider that Bible verse briefly. The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. We agree with that. At first, there should be fear that we're trapped in material existence. We're trapped in material bodies and minds. We're subject to illusion. It's a fearful situation. We don't know what the reactions to actions are going to be. Time is corroding our bodies and minds. It's a fearful situation indeed. So yes, the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. But the bhakti yogis will say it's not the end of wisdom. And indeed, bhakti is about the end of all wisdom, pure love of Krishna. So many times in the Bhagavatam, you see examples of Krishna making arrangements so that his dear devotees forget about his power and majesty and just love him as their dearest son, their dearest lover, their dearest friend. Chaitanya Charitamrita stated that more than the official hymns of the Vedas, Krishna likes it when he's chastised by his intimate devotees. The pinnacle of bhakti is that the devotee conquers the unconquerable Krishna through pure love. Nevertheless, we have to start somewhere. Just like in our deity worship. We're worshipping Radha and Krishna, as I'm sure you all know, but in the mood of worshipping Lakshmi Narayan. That means with awe and reverence. And that awe and reverence consists of punctuality and cleanliness. We don't try to picture ourselves as serving Krishna directly. It's me and Krishna, the deity. We begin by thinking that we are the servants of the parampara who are serving Krishna. And of course, we never give up that understanding. Through the parampara comes intimacy with Krishna. That is a long process. That does begin with awe and reverence, protocols, etiquettes, proper behaviors. That's the beginning. We were speaking about how religion is acknowledged even by atheists as having some good effects. In that it gives people a sense of meaning and purpose in life. And it inspires art, it inspires music, it inspires humanitarianism. So, when we come to bhakti, we may come with religious sentiments, which is nice. I want to believe in God. But Bhagavad Gita is taking us much deeper than mere belief in God. Bhagavad Gita is all about the process by which we can understand Krishna and love Krishna. Bhagavad Gita is a process book. It's giving methodology, or you could say spiritual technology, for actually entering in to the spiritual reality. This is why in Bhagavad Gita, I always point out, Krishna doesn't ask for you to believe in Him. Instead, Krishna tells you, I'm going to teach you how you can become free from illusion, how you can connect to Me. Here's the process. Just listen. So this is what makes Bhagavad Gita the pinnacle of wisdom and knowledge. You're actually getting process by which you, if you're serious enough and patient enough, you can verify the spiritual reality. So we don't want to criticize religious belief. There's no point in that. As Srila Prabhupada writes in the third canto of Bhagavatam, criticizing religious belief systems of whatever type simply produces an agitation in the mind. It's not necessary. At the same time, we should understand, what is real religion? What is the goal of real religion? So you'll easily say, well, the goal of religion is to love God. All religions are trying to do that. That is true. At the same time, we have to point out that the more knowledge of the Supreme that you have, the more your love will increase. So this is why it's so important that Krishna explains Himself in Bhagavad Gita. Because by your taking Krishna's explanations of Himself, you're getting a chance to know more about Krishna. And that means you're getting a chance to love Krishna more. So let's consider our human affairs. It's always good to look at our human affairs, because there we'll see remnants or splinters of the spiritual reality. Of course, those remnants, those splinters, will be perverted, distorted. But when we see through the eyes of Shastra, we can actually detect how indeed the material world is the shadow of the spiritual world. Chayeliyasya Bhuvanani Bhavarti Durga, Lord Brahma explains. The Maya potency is the shadow potency. Chayeva, certainly, just a shadow. So shadow lets you know that there's some light somewhere. Just like counterfeit money lets you know that there's real money somewhere. When we look at human affairs, we see that people like to get to know one another. I'm sure every one of you here has the experience of, you've had the experience of trying to know someone. Now, why is that? You may have just done it automatically. Or you might have even said to someone, you know, I'd like to know you better. How many of you have said something like that? I'd like to know you better. You just did it. When you first met your wife, did you say something like that? You know, I'd like to know you better. Maybe you're still saying it. So we see that we have this desire to want to connect to people through knowledge and awareness. So we're sure that Yudhisthira didn't say about his good wife when he first met her, you know, I'd like to believe in you. Well, how would you have felt if you said that? Yeah, and you're thinking, look, do you want to begin a relationship or not? How do I care whether you believe in me or whether you don't believe in me? It's irrelevant. I am what I am. I'm here. So what is your plan for getting to know me? So why, then, do we make such a big deal about believing in God? Of course, religious belief is better than nothing. And we support religious belief. At the same time, we're aware that in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is giving you the process by which you can know him better. In fact, what does he say? Asamsayam samagam yatha gyasa tashtanu. Just listen. You're going to know everything about me. And you'll be, you won't have any doubts. Listen as I describe the process. So this is what makes bhakti special. It's founded on two things, jnana and vairagya, knowledge and detachment. Both things are necessary for there to be actual dynamics in a relationship. Just like you can look at human affairs. And you can see a perverted reflection of the reality of jnana and vairagya, knowledge and detachment. You, whether it's a friend or a romantic partner, you develop knowledge of that person, and you're supposed to detach yourself from everything that would hinder the relationship. Yeah. Did you two have that? Yeah, you had those ground rules, right? We got to get to know each other. And we have to detach ourselves from anything that could be a negative influence on the relationship. So we see that we are a great personalist in our life. We can't deny that. We want to connect. We want relationships. We want to get to know someone. And we want to commit ourselves to some degree and relinquish any barriers that get in the way of the relationship. Well, this is what bhakti is all about. Many of us have to make a decision as we push on with our Krishna consciousness. How much do we want to remain on the platform of religious belief, which is nice, it's something, and how much do we want to push ahead in the methodology, the spiritual technology for knowing Krishna more? And knowing Krishna more awakens love of Krishna. Well, many of us will cross that bridge sooner or later. We'll cross the bridge from religious sentiment to actually firmly embracing the process of getting to know Krishna so that we can serve Krishna better and ultimately love Krishna better. The other thing that we need to get over besides religious belief, and this other thing is also good, just like religious belief, but it's something you have to outgrow. It's a good thing, just like when you're a little kid and you wear diapers. It's a good thing, but you've got to outgrow it. So you have to outgrow religious belief, and you also have to outgrow performing devotional service because of material relief. I've talked to many of you, and you've described how you were suffering in material existence. Roasting in the blazing fire of material existence. And then you took up the bhakti process and you felt such relief. One devotee was telling me today how he met a devotee who told him, this is during his pre-devotee days, he met a devotee who told him, chant Hare Krishna and you'll feel the happiest you've ever felt in your life. So, he remembered that statement and he decided, today I'm feeling pretty lousy. Let me search the internet and find someone who's chanting Hare Krishna. So he found some kirtan on the internet and started chanting along with it. Now, this is the best I ever felt in my life. So, the desire to have relief from material existence is laudable. It's a very important factor in so many persons coming to bhakti. As I travel around the world, I often take an informal survey and I ask persons, you know how Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvidha Bhajante Mam Jana Sukritina Arjuna, four types of persons approach him, all of them have Sukriti, auspicious merit. The distressed, the inquisitive, seeker of economic prosperity, and one who wants knowledge. So in my travels around the world, I ask devotees, which of those four groups do you mostly fit in? Let's try it here. Now, there could be overlap, but let me ask you, which of those four groups, inquisitive, distressed, looking for economic prosperity, or looking for knowledge, which one of those four groups do you mostly fit in? So how many mostly fit in the category of inquisitive, curious about metaphysical things, spiritual things, things beyond the normal, the paranormal? That was your main reason. Okay. Okay. How many of you came to bhakti for economic prosperity? Into that yet? No. In third world countries, you'll find that stuff. How many of you came because you wanted the highest knowledge? And how many of you came because you were fried on material life? Yeah, it's always a game. That's good. But at some point in our spiritual progress, we have to move on from just being fried and getting relief. The example I often give is, let's say it's a real hot day, and it's like up at the farm, and this can be the, it's really hot. So, and you come into an air-conditioned car or air-conditioned room, first thing you do. So when you first come to bhakti, after lifetimes changing bodies in the blazing fire of material existence, you're going to feel the nectar of relief in from the storm. And you can see in new devotees that that becomes a, that's a predominant theme, that they feel glad to have escaped the blazing fire. And there's nothing wrong with that. If you're on, if you're in a house that's on fire, you're in danger, and somehow you escape, certainly you should be thankful. You'll feel a great sense of relief. But you can't continue in bhakti just on the platform of relief from material suffering. You have to move on to a positive platform. And that positive platform is attachment to Krishna's service, which gradually you realize is attachment to Krishna. So many of you raised your hand and said that you came to bhakti mainly out of relief. There could be other overlapping reasons, but mainly because of relief. That means we have a mandate. Politicians always talk about mandates. But we also have a mandate in bhakti to push beyond motivation based mainly on relief. Because it can't sustain you for the long range. It won't do that. Let's think of any relationship as an example. Looking at ordinary human affairs again and trying to get some insight into how real affairs on the spiritual platform work. So in ordinary human affairs, let's say you've been burned badly by friends or romantic partners in the past, and then you find someone, a friend, a partner who it seems things will work out. Now suppose you, year after year with that person, friend or lover, you say, you know, those other, let us say, we'll take you to stick first. Let's say you just told, year after year you told your wife, you know, those other girls, they were just horrible. Those other girls, oh man. After a while, she said, hey, is there anything positive about me that we can talk about? Oh, but those other girls, oh, they really fine. I'm so glad to get away from them. I'm so glad that I escaped them. This is not a sustainable platform for a relationship, although it's good in the beginning. I'm sure that she would be happy to hear in the beginning how he has escaped from so many damaging relationships and now has something substantial. But sooner or later, you have to move on to the positive platform. And she'll want to know, what is it about me that you're attracted to? Why don't we talk about that? Forget the wreckage of the past. So similarly, in our bhakti development, we have to move past the wreckage of our pre-devotee days. When I say move past that, I mean, don't base your service to Krishna simply on the fact that I suffered so much. We should become positively attracted to Krishna. Sometimes you see devotees, though, they don't take that extra step to get beyond feelings of material ego. And things become shaky after a while. Why is that? Who can say why after a while? Just basing, oh, you know everything. Why would that be a shaky platform after a while? What do you say?
It's not based on love.
True, but can you give a more immediate insight? Yes. Exactly. How long can you remember how you were burnt out? The memory fades after a while, over time. It doesn't remain strong enough to propel you forward. Now, when you were actually scorched and burned and incinerated, you go, I'll never forget this. But you do forget. That's the nature of material existence, forgetfulness. And of course, the main reality that we've forgotten is Krishna. But forgetfulness means across the board. The effect of illusory energy is such that it dulls our awareness. And we always have to be on guard about this. We have to be very pragmatic and realistic about what it's like to dwell in the material energy. There's the tendency of the material energy to wear us down, to delude us, to cover us over. So even powerful traumas can be forgotten. So if you base your whole devotional life on how you were burned out in material life, it's not going to sustain you over the years because you're going to forget. Therefore, our bhakti has to be firmly linked to positive development of attachment for Krishna's service, which leads to attachment to Krishna. Sometimes young devotees ask questions like, well, why do older devotees have problems? They ask me this. Isn't it so that after X amount of years of bhakti practice, you're over the hump? And automatically, you have no problem. But you can't hold a time schedule to Krishna. It's all about how much you have invested your core being in trying to be attached to Krishna's service, trying to be attached to Krishna's name, trying to be attached to Krishna's devotee. You invest in those and you cling. That's like a child clinging to mother. This is not a passive process, it's a very dynamic process. And all of you have the ability to be very acquisitive in either material existence or spiritual existence. You have the capacity, you want to go out and get something. You want to grab onto something. The bhakti process requires that you invest your acquisitiveness, your go-getting nature, invest that in devotional service. And if you do that with determination, regardless of the inconveniences that come your way, because after all, material life is completely inconvenient. When I say material life, I mean living in a material body, living in a material world, is always going to be inconvenient. We can't blame Krishna for that. We chose to come here. We chose to take up the process for forgetting Krishna. So if we invest of ourselves actively in the process of bhakti, according to our ashram status and situation. Different ashrams have different styles for investing the core being in Krishna's service. Then you'll see that you move far beyond the plane of just dealing with Krishna out of material exhaustion. Although, that dealing with Krishna out of material exhaustion is laudable in the beginning. Queen Kunti Devi said, Tom McKinson approach. You more easily become the property of those who are materially exhausted. At the same time, we should understand that material exhaustion doesn't automatically and directly lead to engagement in bhakti. There has to be contact with the devotee. This world is full of people who are materially exhausted, but you don't see them practicing bhakti because they haven't had the opportunity to favorably connect with a devotee. But if someone is materially exhausted and interacts with the devotee, then something can happen. So it's not that material exhaustion will lead you directly to bhakti in of itself. This is why Krishna has arranged so many contact points with devotees throughout the universe. Even the slightest contact with a devotee can plant a seed. And then, when there's material exhaustion, something can happen. So yes, material exhaustion has its value. But we need to move beyond that. So there are two things, please bear in mind. We have to outgrow religious belief and dealing with Krishna based on relief from material suffering. So what do you think? Is it possible?
Yes.
Okay. This must be sitting here, you know.
Should I sit there?
Please. Is it possible?
Thank you.
Yes, it is possible. So by coming in, into the Association of Devotees and hearing from the right source with the right attitude, one can take up the process of hearing and chanting and the other nine processes of devotional service. And as soon as one does that, the positive things happen. There's a positive spiritual pleasure that you feel that's beyond just the relief of material misery or vague belief in God. And that spiritual pleasure, if one cultivates it properly, then one can graduate from any of these four reasons that Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita for coming to Krishna consciousness. And so the process as given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers is geared toward awakening that positive spiritual experience that eventually or even quickly can make one give up the material motivations and acquire a generally spiritual motivation for serving Krishna. I would imagine. So, one of the things that I was going to say about the answer that you didn't let me do what she did about forgetting is that I was recalling how it said that if you're careful not to give up the pieces or give up the material, if you don't pull out the weeds in your heart as you hear and chant water the bhakti creeper, then the very activities of bhakti, the hearing and chanting, can feed the weeds. And the experience that we may have is that as you go along in devotional service and your distress is gone, you actually feel this awakening of spiritual pleasure. But if you're not careful in your following of the process, then that enjoying mood that's really awakened, Ladini Shakti, it's the same enjoyment that you're experiencing in serving Krishna, can be then again directed toward material things. We've seen historically that this devotee is doing so nicely. It was so many years doing such important service, but they let the sadhana lapse become ragged, and that very power, that spiritual energy, then became directed on the material side. And you can commit great offenses, and as soon as you do that, then you lose your ability to really contact Krishna. Krishna takes away your taste for the holy name, or your relish in the devotional sangha, and you find yourself drawn practically irresistibly on the material side. So these are some of the injunctions that we have. Take over. Yes, so Dravida Prabhu was explaining about the weeds that grow in our bhakti garden. Now, I know for some of you, you might be thinking, oh look, give me a break, how much do I have to worry about? Why can't I just grow the bhakti creeper and not worry about the weeds? How much can I handle? How big is my capacity, how much do you want out of me, Give me a break, I want to believe in Krishna. Isn't that enough? I acknowledge I was fried in material life. Isn't that enough? And now I hear all this talk about weeding a garden. It's work. How many of you have gardens and you weed them? It's work, isn't it? Isn't it that people are always interested in methods of gardening where you don't have to weed? Permaculture is like, is it? From time to time, someone writes a gardening book about the no-weeding garden and becomes a bestseller. Wow! I can garden finally without worrying about the weeds. Just let the weeds grow and everything will be fine. I have a great heart. So similarly, in terms of bhakti, we may be feeling that way. That I don't want to just worry about weeding. But in any relationship, I speak of relationship with Krishna. It's part of the burden of love to be mindful of things that might damage the relationship. Isn't that so? Isn't that what a friend would expect of you? Isn't that what a lover would expect of you? That you're always on the lookout for things that could spoil that relationship. And if you don't see that in a relationship, you get a little worried. Like, this person is not really taking me seriously enough. This person's not on guard about things that could wreck our relationship. So you think the person's very casual, cavalier, and just there's no depth. But when you see someone who is always on the lookout for anything that could damage a relationship, you trust that person, you take that person seriously. It's like I hear from, just an example, god brothers who've been married for a long time. You ask them, well, are you going to do such and such? I don't know if my wife would like that. So they become sensitive over the decades, after 20, 30 years of marriage. That, you know, they could be acting, they're sensitive to things that could spoil the relationship. So why can't we do that for Krishna? Why are we so lazy? We want the no-weed garden. Of course, it's Kali Yuga. Manda sumanda mateo manda bhagya yukaburta. Everyone's lazy and slow, especially about spiritual matters. But if we start looking at weeding our bhakti gardens as an expression of love, positively, then we can become more motivated. It's a burden of love. Because I want to care so much for this person. I want to deepen my relationship with this person. Therefore, I'm on alert to deal with any weeds. And certainly, as we advance in bhakti, we become more mindful of the weeds. Otherwise, our advancement becomes curtailed, as Dravida Prabhu was explaining. One thing Prabhupada writes in his purports in Chaitanya Charitamrita, explaining about the weeds and the bhakti creeper, that, as Dravida Prabhu was explaining, the hearing and chanting process nourishes the bhakti creeper and also nourishes the weeds. And what happens is that these weeds are, it's difficult to tell the difference between these weeds and the bhakti creeper. They start looking, it looks like they're the same. That's why guidance is required in bhakti. Maya is tricky. So sometimes these weeds, they resemble the bhakti creeper. Not in actuality, but because of our faulty vision. There's no substitute for the bhakti creeper. But our faulty vision can't discriminate. And therefore, we can easily become fooled. That's why guidance is so required in bhakti. It's the most serious and powerful undertaking to develop or to revive your relationship with Krishna. Once you understand how the weeds in the bhakti garden operate, you become very attached to the association of devotees. Because in the association of dedicated devotees, it's easy to spot those weeds. Whereas on your own, you can be fooled due to faulty vision. But in the association of devotees, you have others who are able to give you feedback. One of my godbrothers used to explain it. Feedback is the breakfast of champions. And that's what these bhakti groups are all about. These bhakti chakras, they provide a format for you to get feedback. And with that feedback, you can spot the weeds. Whereas on your own, you could easily be overwhelmed. You can easily concoct when you're on your own. Oh, look at that. It's the luxurious growth of my bhakti creeper. Whereas others, they can pick up on this. I think this is a weed. So we need each other to help spot the weeds. You can always look at another devotee and just see something you can learn from. And you can, in your heart, aspire that I'd like to have that quality. This is the sport, the recreation of how to associate with devotees. You're always on the lookout for the wonderful qualities in devotees. And then, and certainly throughout the day, you're going to be seeing those qualities. And then you pray to Krishna, please, let that quality develop in me. And then what does Krishna do? He's, as Prabhupada says, Krishna's not lazy in your heart. He's active. He senses that, oh, this is your desire? All right, I'll help. So we might just take it as a very casual thing, the awakening of a desire to develop a particular devotional quality. And we may think that this desire is inconsequential. We're wondering, does Krishna really notice? But indeed, Krishna does notice. So, part of the sport of associating with devotees. It's the greatest sport. It's the greatest art. It's the greatest science. Part of it is relishing the qualities of the devotees and then begging Krishna, please, may this quality develop in me. And this way your life is always feeling enriched. Your life is always feeling fortified. And it's very easy for you to benefit from the association of devotees in that their association clarifies what are the weeds in your garden and what is the actual bhakti creeper. So in that way, we really need each other. And the more you realize how much you need devotees, the more thankful you become that you have the association of devotees. And the more you realize you can't live without them. Of course, this realization goes through various phases. In the beginning, when you first took up the bhakti process, how many of you saw all devotees as just shining, luminous beings? Raise your hands. They practically blinded you with their effulgence. Then what happened after a while?
You get to know them.
And, yeah, getting to know them means.
You start to see things that aren't so brilliant.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah, and then it further progresses to
criticism, fault-minded.
Exactly. So, whereas before you saw devotees as their feet never touched the ground, after a while you start seeing that they have descended a bit. So, you start fault-finding, you start criticizing, and that becomes it can even become a predominant mentality. After 2 years, the truth hits you. Oh my God. These devotees don't think the way I do. And what's more, they don't do things the way I do things. So then you have to make a decision. What are you about? Are you associated with devotees? For what reason? Because for many of us, you look around the room of devotees and you say, if I weren't a devotee, I'd never be in the same room with you. Yeah, maybe you look at your own husband or wife and say, yeah, I would never associate with people like you if I weren't a devotee. But based on service to Krishna, we can truly become unified. But without service to Krishna, we just look at so much material disparity. I would never be talking to you. I'd never do things with someone like you. So this This may shake us after a few years of our spiritual life. And then we have to commit ourselves to understanding the true value of devotee association. And learn how to utilize that association for enlivening our spiritual life. And that becomes a sport, a great art, great recreation, associating with devotees, appreciating their various qualities, and begging Krishna, I'd like that quality. Life becomes very interesting in that way. It becomes a hobby. You know, some people collect stamps or collect old cars. On our way here from the same, from Dravidapur's place where I stay, we stopped at a red light and a whole line of old collector cars passed us. The drivers were having a night out in the town hall, all the old car drivers together. And so that's their hobby. It gives them some artificial pleasure in life. But what is our hobby? Our hobby is really not sports. It's not collecting stuff. Our hobby is associating with devotees and meditating on their qualities. That becomes the substance of our life. It's true, sometimes devotees will disappoint us. Sometimes there can be arguments about how to serve Krishna best. Sometimes there can be disagreements, but those things should never predominate our vision of devotees. In spite of those bumps in the road due to social interaction in the intercali, we should always keep ourselves in the position of wanting to profit from devotee association by relishing the qualities of devotees. There'll be challenges sometimes. Because after all, we're practicing material life in the spiritual, we're practicing spiritual life in the material world. Sometimes things don't fit. But we shouldn't give up the quest to relish the qualities of devotees.
Please. Sorry. So, we're reading the first canto, and we're just finishing up Queen Kunti's prayers. And there was a statement in one of the purports, I think it was to this, like, it's the last prayer. Vai me ananda vishaya, mati madhupate, sukrit ratamun bahatala, dha gange bhagamadandati. In which Queen Kunti prays, oh, if you my little poem to this one. O Mother's Lord, please ever fill my mind with thoughts of thee, not any other kind. As Ganges torrent flows into the sea, let all my love flow constantly to thee. One of my favorite all-time verses. And such a beautiful purport Prabhupada gives there. And near the end of that purport, he mentions how when devotees meet together in the association of devotees, I think it's this purport, and how they relate through the medium of the supersoul. In other words, when Krishna's in the middle of our relationship, you can meet another devotee and you can talk about 9/11. You can get off and talking about you know, the planes and this and the conspiracy and this and that. Before you know it, Krishna's not there anymore. You're still devotees, but that's what the topic is. Or, you know, even more to the point, you could be talking about him and her and this and that and ISKCON and this and that. Oh my God! Before you know it, you know, you haven't really glorified Krishna. You haven't uplifted each other, but you've drawn each other down. And so, one of the things one wise devotee once told me, I think his name is Sarva Boma. He's in LA. He's in LA.
Yeah.
I was once on a trip. This was in 75 when I got to go. I don't know if you stayed in Brooklyn and the BBT all went to the Open Christian Ball. Did you go with that?
No.
Okay. So this is my first trip to India. You know, most of the time I was either getting sick or even getting relief from getting sick, but I remember some of the things that would happen. And we were on this train from Mayapur to Hyderabad, and from there we were going to go to Vrindavan for the opening Krishna Balaram temple. So it was a long train trip from Mayapur, Calcutta to Hyderabad. And I was sitting next to Sister Bodhi, and I was, you know, getting into this, and I was talking about this one and that one. He cut me off. He said, "One thing I learned is try to always glorify. If you're always glorifying the devotees and Krishna, Vajitanya, Prabhupada, and devotional, then you can't switch into that criticism mode. Glorification is exactly the opposite of blasphemy. You know? So if you're always finding a way, when you get with devotees, to glorify Krishna, like everyone knows, I like to, you know, share shlokas and everything. As soon as you start figuring out shlokas, there's no room for Vajalpa, because the only Sanskrit shlokas we know are about Krishna. Yeah. And it just brings so if Krishna's in the middle of the relationship, either as sharing service, planning how to serve together, talking about devotional service or something to do with, you know, Krishna and Vajitanya and Srila Prabhupada and like, then this is the uplifting association. This is real sadhu sangha. And this is the real value of devotional association. So how to associate is really, you know, everything. It all begins with association. When you come into the association of devotees for the first time, or you get the association of devotee for the first time, out there, with books, with some invitation, or online, or somehow or other, and it strikes a chord, and a little seed of faith is planted, then that's really the beginning. You've got some positive input from Krishna through that devotee, you know, and then if you're able to pursue that, you know, so many devotees are becoming interested in Krishna Kata, even taking up the process online, you know, because there's so much. But it has to eventually come to the point where you make the effort and you come to the physical association, as it were, so you can sustain it regularly. Then the question is what you do with that association, and how powerful it is, and how you pursue it. And that's the great value of the Bhakti Chakra or the temples or any place where devotees regularly gather, is that it's a place where, as Maharaj said, you get feedback and encouragement and upliftment, and it's Krishna's there. You know, you're associating with Krishna through his devotees, and this is what keeps us sustained in our devotional life. So you know that. But if Krishna's in the middle there, you're associating, because otherwise, how are we associating? How do we see each other? If Krishna's not in the middle, and we start to fall into distinguishing on bodily level, the age level, this level, that level, that's really not Krishna conscious. So keeping Krishna in the middle of our relation, this is what Rupa Goswami is explaining. Did that be the Vidhunati be? To inquire spiritually, you know, about Krishna, and to share one's realizations, give gifts and accept gifts. Give some prasadam, you know, and accept prasadam. We'll get it the next second one. Actually, always giving prasadam. It doesn't always have to be like something to eat. Prasadam could be any mercy that you have, any mercy that you've experienced, any realization that you have. This is all part of it. So those are some of the thoughts that I've come across. And I just wanted to thank our hosts here and for providing such a wonderful facility. I got lost coming. Couldn't find it. It was like trying to find, you know, the spiritual amongst all the material. By good fortune, someone explained to me that there's also a private echo drive that you go on. You know, going back and forth, turning around, and it's like a microphone, and, you know, the dom.
We have time for a few questions, not many, because yes.
Could you give me an example of a movie that might look like?
Here's a subtle one. I don't want you to be frightened. I was speaking about it at New Dorka a few days ago. You'll find it mentioned in the Seven Canto Bhagavatam, Prahlad, Maharaj, Nrisingadeva. And Nrisingadeva offered Prahlad material benediction to Prahlad, declined. He told Lord Nrisingadeva, "You know my background. I'm from a family of demons. Please don't tempt me with material benefits. You know where I'm coming from." Of course, then again, Prahlad said, "You're only doing this," he told Lord Nrisingadeva, "you're doing this simply to, you're offering me material benedictions simply to show the world what is the standard of pure devotion. Because you sent me into this world to demonstrate the qualities of a pure devotee." So, in the purport, Prabhupada makes an interesting point. He says, the exchange of devotional service for the fulfillment of lusty desires is common. Now, what could that be? How many of you can remember when in your material endeavors, you worked hard for something, and after working hard, you go, "Now I'm entitled to enjoy"? How many? Yeah, it's common. Okay? I really, like in school, you may have studied hard for a big exam, or at your workplace, you may have been on a marathon, and then you say, "Okay, now I've earned the right to kick back and enjoy." So, I was just thinking about this last week, that this can also be there in our bhakti garden. And it's actually a weed. That, "Krishna, I served you so much, you owe me some good times." The good times roll. "I've served so intensely, now I should enjoy my senses." So, Srila Prabhupada explained, this is quite common. And it's actually a weed in the garden. And we have to be careful about that. Actually, the goal of bhakti is that you're not even worried about whether you're free from material existence or not. You're not caring whether you're liberated or not. You just want service to Krishna and association with Krishna's devotees. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur shows us that example that he wants us to follow. He says, "Kita janmahau. I don't mind taking birth even as an insect, as long as it's in the house of a devotee." So, you read the prayers by the Prachetas in the fourth canto of Bhagavatam. And they say that they're not so concerned with whether they're going to be transferred to the spiritual world or not. They just want association with devotees and a chance to serve. And in the purport, Prabhupada writes such a beautiful purport. The real devotee is not worried when he goes to the spiritual world. In fact, he says, a real devotee thinks, I'm too contaminated to ever go back to Godhead, but let me engage in Krishna's service. So that's the mature fruit of the bhakti creeper, and it will happen. In time, that fruit will be there. Thank you. Question for Dravida Prabhu.
Go ahead, Mark.
This might be like a pretty basic, or maybe I'm
wrong. That's good. That's a kind of maybe answer. Maybe.
Today is the first time I've ever heard the term bhakti creeper, or bhakti creeper, or something.
Yes, a bhakti creeper. Just like a little vine growing, a little plant growing in the heart. So what is that all about?
Yeah, I didn't know.
This bhakti creeper, bhakti lata, this it comes from the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to Rupa Goswami. Oh, I'm sorry. He's asking, what is this bhakti creeper? Because he's pretty new. He hasn't heard that phrase yet. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching Rupa Goswami in the 19th chapter of Madhya Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita, he mentions how by the grace of the Guru and Krishna, the fortunate souls wandering up and down the universe in different species and in so many difficult situations receives the seed of the creeper of devotion, bhakti lata bija. And that bija is in the form of instructions, in the form of faith, in following instructions in the holy name. And if we take that seed into our heart and we water it properly, then it starts growing a little creeper. And a creeper is in the form of really desire. We already have so many creepers growing in there. Karma bijas, the seeds of karmic activity and desire, are constantly being planted. And we're nicely watering them and trying to enjoy the fruit, which is we enjoy a little bit and it's bitter. We find a worm inside, you know. It's never satisfying. So there's so many creepers growing. But this bhakti creeper is now was what we want to try to cultivate, and that's where the whole idea of pulling up the weeds comes in. Because they call the upashaka. Upashaka means other creepers, other weeds. And those are all these material desires that are constantly growing. And like advertising, the whole idea is to plant seeds of desire in your heart. And they know that you may just see that ad, that billboard, or that thing on your iPod for like 5 seconds or something on the screen. And you forget about it. But the seed has been planted, and when next comes time to buy a beer, you buy that beer. You don't know why. He says, oh yeah, I like that. Because the seed has been planted. So all these material seeds, and we're already growing them, are already in the heart. When the creeper of devotion begins to grow, chiefly watered by the process of hearing and chanting, Hare Krishna, the kirtan, and the other pure sound vibrations, then that creeper starts to grow, and now we have to become gardeners and pull out the weeds. And the weeds are mostly in the form of offenses. You know, we said, you've been in the morning where we chant these 10 offenses and to try to avoid them, and material desires and all these different things. So that's the process of bhakti. And then eventually, if you successfully tend this garden and avoid the offenses, chief of which is the blasphemy of devotees, especially the pure devotee, which can destroy the whole garden. But you can eventually taste the fruit of that creeper, which is the fruit of love of God. So that's what the creeper is. It's really easy. I mean, I'd like to realize it, but at least I know it's pretty much easy. Okay, you're next. Okay.
I was just reading this whole verse about
Bhakti
Lata, about how everything came. That's great, Krishna. I hope they talk about the Bhakti Lata tonight. But one thing they were saying is that it has to be regularly watered by the chanting.
Uh-huh.
And then it grows and grows and grows, and then the bhakti lata penetrates the spiritual world and it lays at the feet of Krishna. But once it gets to the world of God, but you go up through the spiritual world, bhakti lata. Is that true?
Yeah, your experience, you know, that, I mean, I wish I could speak from realization. But it is explained how, you know, the local Vrindavan is all pervading. we talk about how you it's piercing the material coverings. It's true, but those coverings are in many ways inside your consciousness. You know, and that's why Maharaj was saying that the devotees don't really worry. Am I going back to Godhead? You know, because if you're with devotees and you're engaged in pure devotional service, intense devotional service, you're back to Godhead. You're back to Godhead. It doesn't matter, you know, physically where you are and so forth. That's where you are. Prabhupada was always with the Godhead. As he says in his famous Throw and Follow letter, you cannot say that you were ever not with Krishna. We're with Krishna right now. But we're dreaming that we're not with Krishna. That's the whole material illusion, is that there are things separate from Krishna. And that's what brings fear, and that's what brings our entanglement as well. Vayam dhiyab anavesham dhikshyab. So turning back to Krishna and reviving that relationship in full means to that Kripa has penetrated, dissipated this material energy, and there you're tasting the fruit of love of God at every moment. And then you're back to God.
And that's what Prabhupada said, the purpose of it, you have to regularly water.
Yes, that's what. Every morning. Krishna kindness begins actually with getting to bed early enough so you can get up early. You have to have a every morning sadhana. That's what the temples are for, a temple in your home. So much of it is the regularity and proper mood and proper association. Chanting and hearing, reading Bible time, worshiping the five processes. You know, living in a sacred place, like, you know, a home which is only dedicated to Krishna. Everywhere you look, you're reminded of Krishna, Prabhupada, Ramachandra. Or, you know, a temple, you know, why? You have to make your home into a temple. And then regularity. And that's why, as Maharaj pointed out, we have to be willing to come under the instruction of a spiritual master. Someone who will say, I really don't want to get up, but I have to get up. What is he gonna think about me? I don't. That's the reference point. It's hard to think, what would Krishna think about me if I don't? Because they don't know Krishna, but what will this person who I have a relationship with, you know, he's my teacher, what will he or she think about me if I don't get up? Oh, I'll get up. And as soon as you start getting up regularly, chanting and hearing, then that's what it takes. Because that, you know, Maya is so powerful immediately.
Speaking of getting up, we should probably move to the kirtan now because Maharaj is taking class, so he has to get up early.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Maharaj will keep giving to us, keep giving to us, keep care of us. Also, we're supposed to keep care of Maharaj.
Okay.
All right. Can we have some kirtan?
Yes.
Okay.
What a let's see.
We stretch our limbs a bit?
Yeah.